follow after him. And I'm going to tell you what, it's not something that I'd sign up for right away. Deny yourself. Take every bit of your wants and your desires out and seek after his. Pick up your cross daily. Yeah, that sounds like fun. And then follow him. And not following him as a physical following behind him. It's actually this spiritual, this moral, this following with everything that you are. And it's pretty important that he says this because he's talking to his disciples and he's saying, guess what? If you want to be like me, if you want to follow me, because this is the culture, this is I'm your rabbi. If you actually want to be like me, guess what? I've just told you where I'm going. I'm going to die. I'm going to be rejected by every one of the people that usually would be the people that would support something like this. And that's the calling. If you want to follow along, you're going to be following in those footsteps. It's big stuff. I know what you're thinking. Who invited the American to preach? If you have any questions, feel free to email me. Steve, what's your email? Just kidding. But anyway, we're going to jump in here, and I'm going to pull a little bit apart. And the main point that I want to get across, if you hear absolutely nothing else, is this. The calling that we have on our lives is to follow Jesus no matter the cost. I'm going to say that again because it's important. The calling that we have on our lives is to follow Jesus no matter what the cost is. That's a tough statement. And it builds off of a lot of assumptions. And the first one being, Jesus is better. Now, when I say that, we kind of lose the context in our modern language because when I say something is better, it's to me an opinion, right? When I say Meat Lover's Pizza is better than any other kind of pizza, I think there's some vegans that might disagree with me. But when I say Jesus is better, it's an objective statement. Meaning that no matter your creed, no matter your race, no matter who you are, no matter what part of the world you are in, no matter your story, Jesus is better for you. And you might say, well, Garrett, that's easy for you to say that Jesus is better for you. But what about for me? What about for the well-meaning atheist down the street? And yes, Jesus is better in every aspect. That we can look back on our lives, and I know, just speaking for me, not speaking for any of you, that I can look back at my life and see the presence of Christ throughout the whole thing and how without him, it would have been a miserable existence. That Jesus is better. And let's not skate over this. It's an actually massive statement. My old church had this equation that they would always say, and they'd say this, that Jesus plus nothing equals everything. And I like that statement. It's simple. It makes sense to me. I'm not a maths person, but that makes sense. That if everything was stripped away from my life, if every dollar was pulled out of my bank account, if my family left me alone, if I was by myself, and I had Jesus, I still have everything. And everything that I need. It's huge, right? It's easy to say now while I'm standing here, but I'd hope to say that it's true. And that's the belief here, and that's the foundation of why we would even follow Jesus to begin with. I'm not saying this to shame you at all. There's going to be people that take lifetimes to take this step, to this understanding that Jesus actually is better for me. What I am saying is that if you're trying to live the Christian life, and that right there is not the reality that you live under, then you're spinning your wheels in the mud. You're not going anywhere. The second point I have here is that if Jesus is better, then follow him. Seems like a logical conclusion, right? Let's go back to the passage for this, and we look at what following him actually looks like. Now, if this is something that you can agree on, that Jesus is actually objectively better for you, if you can say that his mission for the world is the right one, if you can look back on your life to this point and say, yes, Jesus has been better for me, then this is your response. That old school discipleship of following him. And we see what's been laid out. It's verse 23. Deny yourself. Pick up your cross daily and follow me. Take yourself and your own wants and your own desires out of it. Pick up your cross, the thing, the very tool that could be used to kill you, in a very public and shameful way, mind, and carry it. Not just once, but daily. And then follow him morally, spiritually, with everything that you have. Seek to model your life after him. And that's a fancy word that we'll use in theology called sanctification. And I've got the definition up here. Yeah, the process of God and man working together to make man look more like Jesus. This isn't your salvation we're talking about. We're talking about the point afterwards, when you realize what Jesus has done for you, of seeking to model your life after him. And that's the journey. That's what we're all on. You tracking so far? All this making sense? Okay, good. Three of you. That's great. Historically, this isn't something that we've done very well. The understanding and kind of the mixing and matching that I can't speak for any of the churches here, but I know in America, at least, we've had this whole thing that, you want to be saved? Well, just pray a prayer, and then everything's fine. You don't have to change anything. It's just like that. You've been, boom, it's done. And that's doing a disservice to people, because you're not inviting them on this journey of transformation, of seeking after God, of sanctification. Following Jesus shouldn't leave you unchanged. In a story that I read in a book by a man named David Platt, who's a pastor and theologian in the States, he basically wrote this story. He said, imagine that we have a lunch date, and I'm running 20 minutes late to it, and I come in and I'm just... I'm sorry. I was crossing the street and a truck going 100K hit me. And it broke my leg, dislocated it. But I jumped up, I set it all right, taped it up a little bit, and I ran here as quick as I could, but it made me about 20 minutes late. At what point does that become unbelievable? If you got hit by a truck, you should look like it, right? It's kind of silly, but in the same way, finding Jesus and bringing that into your life shouldn't leave you looking the same as it did before. Just like you were sharing earlier, that there's that unique scent, that unique flavor that comes off the Christian life. It's because there's a difference for people who found Jesus and understand that he is better. Kind of one of the final points I have here in moving along is that following Jesus looks like sacrifice to see the victory of the kingdom being built. So all this sacrifice, all this calling that we have to follow after him that's going to cost something, isn't so that you get paid back later. It's for the victory of seeing the kingdom being built. And the kingdom will be built, whether or not we're along on the journey, but we get that opportunity to be along on the journey. And I'm not saying that everybody should drop what they're doing and go and get a Bible school degree. That creates far too much competition for me. But what I am saying is that in your own life, there's a way to be faithful with this. And I'm not saying that we hang ourselves out to dry either. That's not what I'm saying. But that giving up our own interests and picking up the cross to see the victory of the kingdom being built is the desire of our hearts. And for me, this is the story that was promised in the graphic of the deep dive photo that they found way back. I don't even remember when that photo was taken. But for me, about 3 years ago, there was something that kind of came and happened in my life that I couldn't turn down, because turning down that opportunity would have been, to me, not seeing the kingdom being built. Can you go ahead and throw up that photo? This is William Murphy. One of my best friends now, amazing man, father of three little children, just adopted one this summer, which was amazing. I didn't actually know him until I was knee-deep in a story that would leave both of us completely unchanged, or would not leave us completely unchanged. You know what I mean, you'll follow it. But I have another friend, his name's John Roth, and John met Will, and realized that Will was in end-stage kidney failure. that he had an autoimmune disorder that, through no fault of his own, decided to target and attack and kill his kidneys at 33 years old. He was basically put onto a list that would see him wait 6 years, if he lived that long, to get a deceased donor's kidney. But the opportunity is there to donate a kidney that makes you skip that list, as long as you have someone willing to donate directly to you. So John Roth, a friend and pastor, met Will and couldn't leave that story where it was. He got tested. But getting tested is just the first step. And it's a 1 in 100,000 chance that you're actually a match if you're not family. Mm-hmm. And John was a match. John starts going through the process. It takes 3 months of rigorous testing between scans, blood tests, psychological evals to make sure that you're okay with this. And he made it all the way to the last stage. And they did a scan and found out that his kidneys were two different sizes. And while they were okay for him, if they split them up, it wouldn't be okay for both. So after 3 months of testing and preparing, he was denied for surgery. He posted about this whole story online, and I followed it from the beginning, and it was heartbreaking to hear at the very end that he didn't make it through to the next stage, and Will was back to ground zero. And John posted the status. It says, if you're willing to get tested to just see if you're a match, go ahead. And I was thinking, yeah, what's the harm? 1 in 100,000 chance. Lightning doesn't strike twice, right? Well, sure enough, I get a call after I went and got tested, and nothing quite prepares you for, hey, you're actually a match for this guy. Would you like to consider donating your kidney? I'll get back to you. But we prayed about it, we thought about it, and we looked through it, and there was still a ton of testing to do, and this was as we were planning to come here, actually, that this happened. And we're thinking, you know what, there's a reason we've been here, there's a reason we've been kind of left here. And I think we need to pursue this, we need to look at it. And the very next call that I get after I say, yes, I'll go ahead and go through with this, is that the town that we lived in had recently done one of these surgeries and killed both the donor and the recipient. And so we had to go 2 hours north to a different city because they canceled the program in the town we lived in. So I'm going through the testing and all the process, and I clear every single step. Get down to the psychological eval, and they said, all right, so you have to be okay with the fact that even though we do all of this testing, there's a chance that we take your kidney out, put it in Will, and his body rejects it. We can't take it and put it back in you. It goes in the trash can, and he's at ground zero, and you're down a kidney. And you have to be okay with that. Maybe. There we go. Alrighty. Sorry about that. Anyway, we went through the last stages of testing, and I was actually cleared and was able to donate that kidney. That's been 3 years ago now. If you go ahead and post the next photo. This was the day after surgery. I healed a little bit better. It took him quite a bit of time to get cleared. But the measure of kidney health in the States, at least, is creatinine. It's a chemical that your kidneys filter out. The measurement's different in the States between here and there, but in the States, a healthy level is between 0.9 and 1.2. Before surgery, Will was at 20. 3 days later, he was within normal levels. And it was amazing. In a way, I kind of hate telling this story because it feels like the Garrett Show, and that's not what it is. Because, you know, even thinking about this, the fact that I thought that this was a kingdom-building exercise for me, for worship for God, for me. But actually, in reality, he found a third person who was a match. And so, without me, it still would have gotten done. But I had this opportunity to live into what it looks like to be a Christian, to be that generous life. I stood nothing to gain, and I definitely had a lot to lose. That's the calling that I have on my life. I can't stand idly by while the mission of God happens What an opportunity I have to see the mission of God realized even in just a tiny way. And it's a daily thing. That's actually why I actually have 9:23 tattooed on my arm. Because I want to live every single day remembering that this is what I signed up for. Exactly what I signed up for. I didn't sign up for some spiritual insurance policy. I didn't sign up just for the little bit at the end. I signed up to see my life laid at the altar of God's feet, knowing darn well that nothing I can do earns me anything, but that I might be able to leave my life as a landmark and a platform to build the kingdom of God just that much more. I don't see myself going down in the history books. That's not the point of it. I'm not going to be some founding church father. That's not what I want to be. The reason I'm doing this is that God is better for me. And living a life devoted to that calling is the only thing I know. So kind of in conclusion, as we're going towards the end here, that this is where the generosity gospel begins. It begins with a proper understanding of these things, of how Jesus is objectively better for me. And if he's better, then I should follow him. And following him looks like laying my life down to see the kingdom built. As we were finally deciding after all of this happened whether or not we wanted to come here, and this is after the surgery, about a year after, I was talking to Will, and I was just kind of torn because an opportunity had come up in my home church to be in my hometown to be a pastor there. He's like, you know, I just feel called to come to New Zealand to be a part of what's going on there, and I just want to have my life be devoted to him. That's just what I want. I don't know what that looks like. And Will said this: what would it look like if God had a handful of people who were completely sold out for his purposes? What would it look like? What could get done in a small town, in a small place, in a small church? A handful of people sold out for God's purposes. What could happen? That's what I want my life to look like. I'm going to leave you with three questions that I kind of asked myself going through this. If you want to pop up the last three there. Yep. Is Jesus better to me? It's kind of foundational. It starts there. And it's okay if you can say for sure right now, no. That's the journey. That's the first step. The second one is, am I willing to deny myself, pick up my cross daily, and follow Jesus? Am I willing to do that? And finally, what am I withholding from God? What is it? I'm going to pray for us, and then we can go ahead and get on with the rest of the day's activities. Lord, I thank you for this opportunity to come here and to share your word. I pray, Lord, that you've taken every bit of me out of it. The world doesn't need more me. It needs more you. I pray that you be with us, that you strengthen us for the opportunities that you have for us. To see the kingdom, but to see you in this country, in this nation, in this world. Thank you. Amen.
What an awesome word. What a challenging word. It's so simple, just straight up. Thanks, man. Garrett came here. He's from, you know, obviously from Timaru, and he's not, you know, part of our fellowship here, but he's family. But the first thing he did is he walked in here this morning. He jumped on the sound desk and he served our worship team and just started, you know, making us sound awesome. And that's just a servant heart, and that's a generous spirit, and it's a generosity gospel. Love that. Thanks so much, man. What a great challenge. What could happen with a handful of people sold out for God in a small town such as this? Hey? It's worth pondering on, isn't it?